Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest. Not so mad science on Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. But right now, we're not at my usual studio. We're at my son's dentist office, who had the misfortune, I would say, of being blessed with too many teeth in his head. As such, the little guy had to have all of surgery. So, had to have some teeth removed so his new adult teeth could grow in. So he's getting settled, getting taken care of. So we're going to get right back to things as we normally do. We're going to do the show from the office of the dentist. But before we begin, we're going to start the show off with a little Sam Cooke, because there is definitely a change coming.
Welcome.
welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to this edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, and scholar. So they tell me. Well, we will yet see whether these accolades bestowed upon me are so. My original intent tonight, dear friends, was to say something with regards to the ratio of men to women here on the planet Earth based on a question that was asked of me last night. However, I'm still going to address that issue in a very, very deeply scientific way, but I would be extremely remiss if I did not speak to us about the weather. For those of you who did not wake up today, this morning, to see all that white stuff called snow, semi-frozen and frozen precipitation in Wayne County alone, the average snowfall across Wayne County is 8.2 inches in Wayne County. Oakland County, average snowfall was 8.7 inches. Macomb County, average snowfall, 7.7 inches. I went even as far as to get the average snowfall for Washtenaw, Livingston, and St. Clair counties. Washtenaw County, 8.5 inches. Livingston County, 8 inches. St. Clair County, 7.2 inches. It's a lot of snow. For a time which is quite early in the season. Where'd all this snow come from and why? Because Monday's snowstorm dumped plenty of snow on the Metro Detroit area, where the average for the Metropolitan Detroit area, which includes all of these counties I've named, is nearly 10 inches in some spots. Many areas outside of the service area of the city of Detroit saw 7 inches to the south. These are the totals that have been reported to the National Weather Service, which then forces me back to the warnings of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Once again, watch the weather. What are the weapons of God? He promised the world, because of the pain and suffering he experienced with Sodom and Gomorrah, where he destroyed life with fire and brimstone. It saddened him so much, the destructive power of the fire and brimstone, that he would not use that again. It saddened him so much with the ethereal flooding at the time of Noah, that he was not going to destroy life via flooding, because it saddened him to do so. So what's left? Rain, hail, snow, and earthquakes. The ring of fire, that notorious belt of volcanoes that loop around a specific section of the globe, has been more active in the past 10 years than it has been in the previous 100-year period. Why? Is there something afoot? Hurricane season has extended itself to starting early and ending later. Why? Is there something afoot? There was a promise made that America would be punished, according to Scripture, for her sins, with snow stored up in the North Country to be released at God's leisure upon man. Why? Is there something afoot? So let's look at these weather anomalies that have struck our area in such a way. Veterans Day began to look a lot like Christmas. This wintry weather pattern that brought single-digit temperatures and more than a foot of snow to parts of the upper Midwest rolled across a wide swath of the nation on this past Monday. A storm going north and south that was almost 3 hours wide, extending east to west, all but almost, if not more in some cases, over 1,000 miles in length. This storm being viewed upon in advance, that meteorologists were able to say that this storm was threatening to break hundreds of weather records, bringing a deep freeze as far south as Florida. The coldest surge of Arctic air so far this season would bring widespread record low temperatures for much of the central and eastern U.S., even down into the Gulf Coast states, according to Kwan Yin Kong, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service and the National Weather Service Prediction Center. More than 300 daily records could fall as far through as this coming Thursday, according to the Weather Service. The city of Houston, Texas, record low temperature for today is 29 degrees, was set 113 years ago. That record has been broken because temperatures reached into the 27 degree range. Nashville, Tennessee's record of 18 degrees, which was predicted for today, was breached when temperatures hit 16 degrees in Nashville, Tennessee. AccuWeather's meteorologist Tyler Royce said many forecasts call for breaking records by just a degree or two. So it was not clear how many would actually fall, but most, in fact, did. The total will be closer to hundreds of records being broken by evening, late tonight, midnight tonight, today. In some places, their records will be smashed. In others, their records will be tied. But we are in for a lot of cold weather. To heed the words again of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, watch the weather. The cold will dip deep in the south. A freeze watch is now currently in effect for Pensacola, Florida, where temperatures are still forecast to dip below freezing by midnight tonight into Wednesday morning. Crestview, which is north of Fort Walton Beach, could see 26 degrees, where it was just 77 degrees on Monday. Low temperatures in parts of Alabama might barely make it to the teens. It's going to be cold and breezy through the rest of tonight, through tomorrow. make sure you're ready for the minus 30 degree temperature drop. According to the weather service in Birmingham that it tweeted out this afternoon, nighttime lows in the low mid 20s with some pockets of the upper 10s. In Oklahoma, freezing temperatures and freezing rain normally reserved for the middle of the winter made their debut more than 2 weeks before Thanksgiving. Tulsa's 101st Veterans Day Parade was an adventure for thousands as they lined the streets despite temperatures in the 20 degrees and strong winds. Freezing rain greeted early arrivals. Watch the weather. Veterans Day Parade 2019 is in the books, according to Spectator Brandon Thompson, as he tweeted, "We're slowly thawing out." All that means is you suffered through a freeze for a parade. Parts of Texas will drop to 16 degrees or below. Cities in Texas and Louisiana were predicted to reach highs in the mid-40s, breaking long-standing records. The high today in Dallas is forecast for 44 degrees, 24 degrees below average for the date. By midnight tonight, Dallas is forecasted for a low of 22 degrees. The record low for this date is 21 degrees. Watch the weather. Monday's high in Brownsville, Texas, was forecasted for 86 degrees, more than double Tuesday's forecast high of 42 degrees. Watch the weather. By Wednesday, the coldest temperatures will drift east. Cities from Boston to Washington, D.C. will again be challenged with record lows for the date. Snow will add the wintry feel across the interior northeast on late today, Tuesday, on through all day Wednesday. AccuWeather says we expect a swath of higher snowfall totals from central New York to northern Maine, where accumulations could climb into the double digits, according to AccuWeather meteorologist Courtney Travis. The upper Midwest was in the thick of it this past Monday. Parts of Michigan were overwhelmed with more than a foot of snow on Veterans Day. Areas of Michigan and Indiana could see and did see 2 feet or more before the snow ended today. It snowed Monday in Chicago. Temperatures were in the 20s with wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. The city of Chicago had to begin opening its warming centers almost 30 days ahead of time. The people of Chicago are advised to take precautions due to low temperatures and winter weather, whether you're on the road or going for a walk, according to Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Watch the weather. Will we heed the warning? Or do we ignore them? If the National Weather Service forecasters were correct, most of the central states area were to wake up with anywhere from 8 to 12 inches of snow outside. The National Weather Service in Buffalo, New York, issued a winter storm warning for Monroe County in New York, among other communities in western New York, that went into effect as of 11 a.m. Monday, which was too late. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Association, issued an alert from its disaster management protocols and its offices of emergency management to its personnel throughout the United States to be on call and prepared for a national emergency due to record snowfalls and record cold. The National Weather Service issued an additional statement at 8:11 p.m. on Monday, forecasting snowfall rates of up to an inch an hour through the evening. They believe that the bulk of the snow will have fallen by the pre-dawn hours today and should be completely on the ground in time for the Tuesday morning commute. For those in the Lake Shore areas, by the end of the storm, those in the Lake Shore areas were swamped with over a foot of snow, more than the anticipated and the expected amount of a foot or less. They were closer to 2 feet of snow. All along the Lake Ontario shoreline, 2 feet of snow. Added to that, the additional inches of lake effect snow. Weather Service meteorologist Steve Welch said the snowfall that came down, he predicted that it would be widespread, meaning it will fall over a 12 to 18 hour span. And the storm is not yet over. There is another anticipated storm, roughly 26 to 30 hours behind. And it's coming our way again. The travel conditions will continue to deteriorate, and the heaviest snowfall and worst travel conditions will continue to develop. Did you know the snowfall was so bad that Chicago O'Hare International Airport had to play catch-up after snow, ice, and wind wreaked havoc on the runways this past Monday, resulting in an American Airlines flight skidding off the runway and into a median, scraping the wings on the snow-covered ground? The Federal Aviation Administration spokesman Tony Molinaro confirmed it in a statement to USA Today that the aircraft's right main landing gear collapsed during the landing. An FAA investigation into the event is underway. American Airlines spokeswoman Sarah Jantz told USA Today that 38 passengers and three crew members from the American Eagle Flight 4125 from Greensboro, North Carolina, was deplaned via bus and safely into the terminal. No one was injured, thank God. However, the record early season snowfall on the runway at the time of the accident was almost 4 inches and continued to impact the airport's operations right through today. Flights were canceled in and out of O'Hare Airport, hit 1,200 flights, and delays alone nearly 900 that evening. By 7:30 p.m. today, excuse me, 7:30 p.m. this morning, the airport had almost recovered completely, and those figures had plummeted to just 83 cancellations and 67 delays. Watch the weather. This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to take a brief, and I mean brief, delay as we regroup and we get into the rest of tonight's program. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Welcome back, welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Gender ratio. In June of this year, Hannah Ritchie and Max Rossner broached the question with respect to gender ratio. The ratio between the number of males and females in a society is referred to as the gender ratio. Now, I'm going to be giving a series of numbers and things like that, but these numbers are fluid, meaning they are subject to change dramatically. But let's take a look. This ratio is not stable, but instead shaped by biological, social, technological, cultural, and economic forces. And in turn, the gender ratio itself has an impact on society, demography, and the economy. In our discussion tonight, we're going to look at an overview of the variation and the changes of the gender ratio across the world. We will then have an opportunity to study how it changes from birth to late life, the forces that change the ratio of men to women. Some will argue pervasively that the term gender and sex are not usable or used interchangeably. Shut up and stop being a muttonhead, you idiot. Gender and sex are not interchangeable. There are only two. So all these other appellatives that are used to describe gender, look, every new generation wants to come up with another term for what they are. You're either male or female, which there is a third potential possibility, which existed before the singular escapades of male and female, of the true hermaphrodite. And I'll explain that later as we go on. But in the context here, we have, however, decided to make an exception. We're going to speak of the gender ratio because it is the established term and will help all those who want to be informed about the numbers of males and females about this topic and search this term, gender. But we also speak of the sex ratio because this is arguably the more accurate term and it is increasingly used within the academic literature. So, in summary, you have the sex ratio as live birth is not equal. In every country, births are male biased. There are biological reasons why there are slightly more boys born every year than girls. The natural sex ratio at birth is around 105 boys per 100 girls, ranging from around 103 to 107 boys. Don't let that number fool you with respect to the gender ratio, which is what the question that was put to me last night that sparked this thought. In some countries, the sex ratio at birth is much more skewed than would occur naturally. Today, and in the recent past, this is particularly common across Asia and North Africa. where there is clear evidence of gender selection through prenatal sex determination and selective abortions, where girls are aborted and boys are not. In other countries where there is a clear son preference, the sex ratio at birth becomes increasingly skewed with birth order. The third or fourth born children are more likely to be boys than the first or second child. In nearly every country, boys are more likely to die in childhood than girls. There are biological reasons for this. Boys are more susceptible to birth complications and infectious diseases. And I'll explain why a little later. In countries where there is strong son preference, mortality rates for girls are higher than would be expected. This can occur either through direct infanticide, but also through neglect and unequal treatment. The sex ratio tends to decrease over the life course, from becoming male biased to female biased. This is because women tend to live longer than men. And I'll explain that as why in a little bit. Just bear with me. It's estimated that today there is over 130 million missing women in the world as a result of selective abortion and excess female deaths. The banning of sex determination scanning and gender selective abortion may have limited the increase in sex ratio at birth in some countries, but did not fully address the female death problem. Development can have opposing impacts on sex ratio. There is evidence that the son preference declines with education, but this often goes hand in hand with declining fertility rates and increased access to selective technologies, which can increase the sex ratio. So what are the gender ratios across the world? What share of the population is male and female at live birth? Not the number of men available to women and women available to men of procreational age, because there is a huge difference in the two. So, the sex ratio, the share of the population that is female, varies across the world. And globally, in 2017, the share of women in the world was 49.6%. So let's say half and half. At birth, there are three reasons why the sex ratio of population varies and is rarely equal. Differences in mortality rates and life expectancy for women and men. Women, on average, live longer than men. This means that all else being equal, we would expect females to account for slightly more than half the total population. With that, women become aged out, meaning the childbearing age of women, those women who can no longer bear children, are the predominant part of the female population. And child age bearing women is significantly less. And the non-childbearing age of women is the second greatest population. So you have young girls who can't have children, second to the population of women, adult women, who can't have children, and a very small population of women that can. Sex ratios at birth are not equal. In all countries, there are more male than female births, the extent of which varies by country. Again, we'll see. We're going to tell you how. This means that all else being equal, we would expect males to account for slightly more than half of the total population. Migration can also affect the sex ratio of the population. If in some countries there is a significant amount of imported male-dominant labor, all else being equal, we would expect males to account for more than half of the total population. The magnitude and the balance of these factors determines the sex ratio of the total population. Most countries have a female share of population between 49 and 51%. With a 1 percentage point of parity. There are, however, a few notable outliers. Across several countries in South and East Asia, most notably India and China, there are significantly fewer females than males. These are countries where there are large differences in the sex ratio at birth. In several countries across the Middle East, there are more males than females. In Oman, however, women are outnumbered 3-1. In the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, is almost 4-1. If we look at how this has changed over time, we see the share of the population that is female has declined from a ratio close to parity decades ago. The primary reason for this is a large male migrant stock. In 2017, 45% of the Oman and 88% of the United Arab Emirates populations were from immigration. The UN reports that only 16 to 25% of the international migrants to Oman and the UAE, respectively, were female. Competition was high to get a woman there. There are significantly more females than males in Eastern Europe and in the United States. Populations in Eastern Europe have some of the largest gaps in life expectancy between men and women. In Russia, for example, the average life expectancy at birth was only 65 years compared to 70 for men, compared to 76 years for women. So how does the sex ratio at birth vary across the world? In some instances here in the United States, the sex ratio of childbearing age women to men in the United States is almost 37-1. In a society like this, Would monogamy be possible? That's a hell of a question. That is a hell of a question and a hell of a burden for a society to bear. The first striking point that in every single country of the world, there are more boys born than girls. What happens? This has been true for all years for which there is data as far back as 1962 in all countries of the world. As you can when you move to the time slider on a map that I will make available to you online, listeners, through the Black Hole Radio website, you might be able to go look back a little bit further. There must be a reason why male births are expected to be, or rather, why births are naturally expected to be male biased. For most countries, there are around 105 males per 100 female births. This is according to estimates provided by the World Health Organization. Estimates as the expected sex ratio at birth. In the absence of gender discrimination or interferences, we'd expect there to be around 105 boys per 100 girls, although this can range from 103 to 107 boys per 100 girls. Why is this? In the most comprehensive study of its kind, Orzac et al. In 2015 monitored the trajectory of sex ratio from conception through to birth across five different methods. This produced the largest data set available on the sex ratio throughout the stages of pregnancy. A key result from this study was that the sex ratio at conception is equal. There is no difference in the number of males and females conceived for births to be consistently male biased. There must be gender differences in the probability of miscarriages through pregnancy. The study found that although the probability of miscarriages varies between genders across the course of a pregnancy, female mortality is slightly higher than male mortality over the full period. Why? The male sperm is far more aggressive, far more determined to live. And for those of you who are not aware, did you not know that sperm goes to war with other sperm in the womb? They are fighting a toxic, aggressive, and violent environment. And they go to war amongst themselves to be the one to make contact with the egg, to be the one to reproduce himself. That one is a winner. He went to war with the environment, and he or she overcame the environment and became the one. However, there was a time in our history, to the advent of the European invasion, where multiple births were the norm. 20s were not unusual. Triplets were not unusual. But this period of time predates the coming of the new man. When the new man came, the environment became, the exterior out-of-body environment became more toxic. Therefore, the internal, interior body environment of the woman became that much more toxic. That sperm had to fight a tougher environment to live. So for those children who run around thinking that they're losers, no, you're not. Do you know how many thousands, hundreds of thousands that you had to go to war with to be the one that was born into the world? You overcame hell to be born into the world. You're born into the world a winner, and you remain one for as long as you want to be one. A little side note. As D.L. Hughley would say, for the GED section. Is there a higher probability that an embryo with chromosomal abnormalities is male in the first week of pregnancy? Excess male mortality therefore means pregnancy is female biased. In the next 10 to 15 weeks of pregnancy, female mortality is higher, which increases the ratio of in favor of males. Male and female mortality is approximately equal up until the 20th week. Between weeks 28 to 35 of pregnancy, there is a higher male mortality. Overall, a male bias sex ratio at birth is the result. However, in some countries, the sex ratio is skewed beyond the expected sex ratio. Some male bias in birth is what we expect with no deliberate gender selection through parents or society more broadly. There are, however, some key outliers in the world today in countries including China, India, Vietnam, Pakistan, Azerbaijan. This ratio is very skewed. Here it is likely that deliberate selection practices explain part of the high sex ratio, as we will explore a little bit later on. More countries have a sex ratio at birth, which is around the expected range of 105 boys born for every 105 girls. There are exceptions to this, however. There are countries, most notably in Asia, with highly skewed sex ratios in favor of males. The preference in some countries for a son is seen in the overall sex ratio at birth figures. But this bias is even stronger when we look at how this ratio is affected by the birth order of children. In the case of India and how sex ratios change from the first child in a family through to the second, third, fourth, and fifth born children, we can infer from a survey by Economic Survey done in 2018 and based on data from DHS and the National Family Health Surveys in India, it presents this data in two cases. When the child is not the last child born, the parents have additional children afterwards. When the child is the last child born in a family, the parents stop having children afterwards. So depending on whether you're a male or a female will dictate whether or not the parents will have another child. If the daughter is born first, there's no more children. If the son is born first, another child can then come into the world. Terrible system, but that's what they do. Sex selection practices also become more prominent for later births in some countries. In some countries, the sex of children can be an important deciding factor for when parents stop having children. The order of birth influences the likelihood of prenatal sex selection, meaning sex-selective abortions. We see evidence of this across several countries. Researchers looked at India in a national survey data from 1976 to 2005 to see how the sex of children and the birth order affects the use of this prenatal sex selection practice. They found a significant and an increasingly skew in the sex ratio since the 1980s. A time when the average woman in India had 5 children. This was mainly the result of male selection for the second or third child within the family. When the firstborn or the first and secondborn siblings were female, then a boy was much more likely the second or the third child. This skewed ratio can only be explained from prenatal sex selection. That is a nice way of saying they aborted what they didn't want and they allowed to live what they wanted. But let's look here at the United States. Why is the sex ratio of male to female so grossly skewed? There are several factors. The male-female sex ratio is skewed due to incarceration of young males. It's due to the extremely high rate of death of young males, 10 to 25. The ratio of male to female is skewed to the female side due to illness and sickness because it is believed that young females, young girls, are healthier than young males. This manipulation of the male-female childbearing ratio is so grossly skewed that the concept of monogamy of male to female is thrown out the window in the United States because there are far too many women who want a man that can't get a man who is not already in possession of someone else. Due to the sickeningly large ratio of females to males. Think about that. jail or dead, or so grossly ill they are of no viable usage to anyone. Jail, dead, or sick. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I want you to percolate on that for a minute. Think about that. Jail, dead, or sick. We'll be right back as we take a listen to Phyllis Hyman.
I say the reasons on my own.
bear with me, my audience here at Not So Mad Science. I had a technical glitch. As I said, I'm doing my show off-site right now. I'm not sitting in my office. I want to explain how something as complex as consciousness can emerge from a gray, jelly-like lump of tissue in the head is arguably the greatest scientific challenge of our time. The brain. The most complex organ. Is a structure not totally understood. How do we begin to understand that organ? The brain consists of almost 100 billion cells, known as neurons, each connected to 10,000 others, yielding some 10 trillion nerve connections. We have made a great deal of progress in understanding brain activity and how it contributes to human behavior. But no one has so far emerged or managed to explain is how all of this results in feelings, emotions, and experiences. How does the passing around of electrical and chemical signals between neurons resulting in a feeling of pain or an experience of red? There is a growing suspicion that conventional scientific methods will never be able to answer these questions. Likely, there is an alternative approach that may ultimately be able to crack the mystery. For much of the 20th century, man has begun to process the idea of consciousness. There was a great taboo against querying the mysteries, the inner world of consciousness. It was not taken to be a fitting topic for serious science. But one must ask himself, when a man looks at a woman and says, "I love you," is that a conscious determination in his mind? If he truly loves that woman, it is. Consciousness. But many consciousness researchers underestimate the depth of the challenge, believing that we must need to continue examining the physical structure of the brain to work out how they produce consciousness. And therein lies the error in their processes. Consciousness is not the construct of the brain itself. Consciousness exists before material brain. Consciousness is the effort of the will to exist and live using brain as a structure to work in. The will. The will is not a material substance. It is mysterious as the idea of what electricity is. You find the source of electricity. You will find the meaning of consciousness. Our consciousness moves throughout the structure of the brain on an electrical impulse from one cellular neuron to the other to produce the movement of consciousness. The problem of consciousness, however, is radically unlike any other scientific problem. One reason is that consciousness is not observable. You can't look inside someone's head and see their feelings and their experiences. I love you. Can you see it? No. But you can experience it without touch. I love you. If we were just going off what we can observe from a third-person perspective, we would have no ground for postulating consciousness at all. Of course, scientists are used to dealing with unobservables. Electrons, for example, are too small to be seen. But scientists postulate unobservable entities in order to explain what we observe, such as lightning or vapor trails in cloud chambers. But in the unique case of our consciousness, the thing to be explained cannot be observed. We know that consciousness exists not through experiments, but through our immediate awareness of our feelings and experiences. I love you. Do you feel it because I said it, or do you feel it because it's there? My consciousness. So how can science explain it? When we are dealing with the data of observation, we can do experiments to test whether or not what we observe matches what the theory predicts. But when we are dealing with the unobservable data of consciousness, that methodology breaks down. The best scientists are able to do is to correlate between unobservable experiences with the observable process by scanning people's brains and relying on their reports regarding their private conscious experience. Do you, 2640, experience my consciousness? By this method, we can establish, for example, that the invisible feelings of hunger is correlated with the visible activity in the brain's hypothalamus. But the accumulation of such correlations does not amount to a theory of consciousness. What we ultimately want is to explain why conscious experiences are correlated with brain activity. Why is it that such activity in the hypothalamus comes along with the feeling of hunger? I hunger for food. I hunger for you. I hunger. In fact, we should not be surprised that our standard scientific method struggles to deal with consciousness. As I read a book that was titled Galileo's Error, Foundation for a New Science of Consciousness, modern science was inexplicably designed to exclude consciousness. Galileo, known as the father of modern science, believed that the physical world was filled with qualities, such as colors and smells. But Galileo wanted a purely quantitative science of the physical world, and he therefore proposed that these qualities were not really in the physical world, but in consciousness, which he stipulated was outside of the domain of science. The worldview forms the backdrop of science to this today. And so no, and so long as we work within it, the best we can do is to establish correlations between the quantitative brain process we can see and the qualitative experiences that we can. You cannot see me say, I love you in my mind, but you hear the word vibrations come out of my mouth. Do the word vibrations that proceed forth from my mouth, inspired by the activity of neurons firing in my brain, touch your brain that you reply back, I love you too. Consciousness meets consciousness. Therefore, mind, not brain, but mind is matter. I can touch you without my hand. I can touch you with my mind. And this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. It is now 48 minutes past the hour, but I have to get me and my babies home because it is time to touch my consciousness. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I leave you as I came to you with the hopes and prayers that God will bless you with the consciousness to be greater tomorrow than you were today, to love more today than you did yesterday, and love even greater going into tomorrow. So in the immortal words of the late, great Adam Clayton Powell Jr., pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. I want to announce to you one and all that coming next week we will have on the air Mr. Aaron Vinson, founder of the Midnight Prayer Service, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We'll have on the air Brother Abdullah Sheen Muhammad from Poughkeepsie. No, he's now in Atlanta, Georgia. And hopefully, McKenfrey Sankofa. Where men from three different religious traditions will discuss with me the power, the purpose, the function, and the need for prayer. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith.